Hello everyone and welcome to this FSCom Launch and Learn webinar, Managing Your Responsibilities in the Ever-Changing World of Sanctions. My name is Neve McGuire and I am the Marketing Executive at FSCom. And I am delighted to introduce our Associate Director of FinCrime Team, Fred McDowell. So that is all from me and I will hand you over to Fred.
Okay, thank you very much, Neve. Warm welcome to everybody. Thanks for taking your time out of your busy schedules to join us today in the webinar. Today's webinar, as you can see, is about sanctions, which is very topical at the moment when we reflect about the very fluid situation with regard to sanctions and sanctions listings. Obviously, with the Russian invasion of Ukraine, it's been a flurry of activity over the last 12 months with a lot of different and new parties been added to sanctions. My name is Fred McDowell. As Neve said, I'm an associate director here at FSCom and the FinCrime team. And the area that we will look at is financial crime prevention for our clients. Okay, we'll just move on to the next slide. Here we go. So a quick little bit of background to FSCom. If there's some people on the call today who haven't joined one of our webinars before, established in 2001, we have offices and we're headquartered here in Belfast. We've also got offices in Dublin and London. We look to be deep domain experts in areas like audits, payments, training, interim rules, advice and opinions. And we cross a lot of different disciplines. We look at IT security, we look at the payments industry, investments, financial crime prevention and technology risk. So we have a broad spectrum of experiences across the team. So let's just give you a little bit of background to FSCom. You can see more about that on our website. And also you'll see that some of the webinars, this webinar and other webinars we've done in the past are also available on the website if you want to look at those at any point in time. So we'll just very quickly go through this. Rather than reading through what I've done in the past, I just want to try, when I've done compliance, I very much try and make it practical. And there's any amount of stuff out there on the internet that is very theoretical, it talks about regulation. So these sessions very much we try to have a focus on a practical aspect of it. The goal very much being that is to try and help you do your roles. If you're in a MLRO role or a head of risk, head of compliance, that you go away with some snippet of information today that lets you be a little bit more informed, maybe look at things in a different way, just expand the financial crime tools you have and the frameworks to make them better for you. So hopefully this session will be very, very practical in that sense. And we'll not focus on the detail of regulation, but really just what the practical implications are for you in your roles if you're doing the likes of an MRO position. So our agenda, and just before I go through it, I'll make two apologies. When we looked through the list of the people who had registered for today's attendance, it's nearly like 99.5% are people in the UK. So we have weighted the presentation very much towards UK regulation. If there are people on to the call today who are outside the UK, we're more than happy to look at doing a separate presentation for your jurisdiction, if that's practical. But it does have a very heavy slant towards UK. And the second apology is, there is no way in a 1 hour webinar that I can go into the detail around sanctions. It is such a wide area, such a huge area with a lot of sensitivities that you probably would need a 2 or 3 hour session to really get into granular detail. So what we will try and do today is keep it at a fairly high level, keep it informative. But as Neve said, if you have particular questions to your firm's position on sanctions, we're happy to take them towards the end of the call, or we'll follow up next week. So we're going to give a little bit of background to sanctions, and we'll try and give a definition of sanctions. We'll look at the different types of sanctions that are in place. That's a kind of theoretical side of things. Then we'll look at the practical side of things, as you know, what are your reporting obligations in the area of sanctions? Licensing, you know what that actually means, the different types of licenses that are there in terms of sanctions. And very importantly, should you ever be in a position where you have a sanction breach, what are the implications of that? What are the fines? What are your obligations? So as I said earlier, we'll try and make this a very practical session for you. So when we think about that, probably predominantly in the 20th century, and if you think of countries like Cuba, Iran, maybe Libya, North Korea, initially economic sanctions were very much focused towards countries. And the goal hasn't changed fundamentally, but the goal then was to maybe inhibit and restrict trade and business relations primarily. However, it was deemed that under that kind of regime, where the sanctions were directed at countries, and they had limited success, and sometimes they actually hurt the most vulnerable people. So as opposed to actually maybe impacting the people who were behind breaking the law or doing actions that they didn't want to be done, it was more maybe the innocent people and often the most vulnerable people who were impacted. So they weren't a great success in that sense. Okay, great. So that kind of earlier slide we did there, I don't know if any of you, some of you will know the name Kofi Annan. Kofi Annan was the Secretary General to the United Nations. And he is reported at one point of time to have said in that role that country-based sanctions tend to conflict the most harm on vulnerable civilian groups. Which is going back to that point that originally when the sanctions were at country level, they maybe didn't have the impact that they actually were trying to do and it hurt the most innocent people. So this kind of saw the shift then to targeted sanctions really in the early 21st century. The 9/11 terror attack in 2001 saw probably the first mass use or a large volume of targeted sanctions aimed very much now at individuals, organizations, as opposed to countries, and effectively the people who were deemed to be, or at that moment in time, intelligence said they were responsible for the offending actions and behavior. So this is really where you saw the seismic shift from country-based sanctions to targeted-based sanctions in that period of time. It's actually quite hard when you prep this, it's actually hard to get one, there's not one definitive definition for sanctions, but we've got a few here. A punitive or coercive measure or action that results from failure to comply with a law, rule, or order. It's a threatened penalty for disobeying a law. So that's a recurring theme you'll see here if you look for a definition of a sanction. So fundamentally, the sanction entity is being penalized and also disciplined. The idea is to, through the deployment of sanctions, you want to change the behavior. So an individual or a group or a regime is undertaking an action that is deemed to be illegal or unlawful and it's not wanted. And through the penalty of the application of sanctions, you're trying to obviously stop that behavior, or the breaking of that law, and bring it back to a position where they're effectively been disciplined back into obedience, into whatever is deemed to be good behavior. So financial sanctions, fundamentally, they strive to coerce a regime or individuals to change that behavior, to constrain them by denying them access to certain resources. Again, you know, that offending behavior is triggering that. It also signals a kind of, it can be a country disapproval, but many, many sanctions come from the United Nations. So you have that weight of many countries behind them, that many countries are saying what you're doing is not right, and our disapproval is, I suppose, visible and endorsed by the fact that we'll support these sanctions. And then also it protects assets where maybe they have been misappropriated from a country until those assets can be repatriated. And that's where we kind of get into the territory of asset freezes. So really it's where a country or an individual steps outside, does something that is unacceptable to the wider nations, the wider world, and sanctions then are applied to try and discipline that action to bring them back to being lawful. Who actually decides then? You know, individual countries can decide if they want to have their own sanctions, but most sanctions probably emanate from the United Nations, and then member states must adopt them. So if you're a member, if your country is a member of the United Nations, and they come out with a new sanction, then I think you're duty bound to deploy that as been one of the member states of the UN. The four primary pieces of legislation in the UK would be the Sanctions and Anti-Money Laundering Act 2018, called the Sanctions Act. That's the one that probably is the most powerful one, and that's actually the one that gives OFSI, O-F-S-I, it gives them their powers under the UK sanctions regime. But also sanctions can sometimes be impacted through the Counter-Terrorism Act, the Anti-Terrorism Crime and Security Act, and also the Export Control Order of 2008. OFSI is the Office of Financial Sanctions Implementation. That's what it's an acronym for. And it's effectively part of HM Treasury in the UK. So they get their power and authority through the Sanctions Act, the first of those four pieces of legislation. There are many different types of sanctions. Again, when you look through and you research this through the UK's HM Treasury site, or you look through OSI's site, or you look through OFAC, you'll see that there's often sanctions are kind of grouped in different terminology. These three here in this slide are effectively the ones that are most commonly used if you look at OSI's site. But there's a wide range of sanctions. For example, there can be trade sanctions. Okay, in the UK, the trade sanctions are implemented through the Department of International Trade. There are financial sanctions, which are implemented through OFSI, and that's the category that we'll have a look at today, because most of the people on the webinar will be in financial services, so it makes most sense to have a look at that. You can also get immigration sanctions, which are implemented through the Home Office, and they're often more commonly known maybe as travel bans. So we're going to focus on the financial sanctions. And in the UK, these kind of come under three broad groupings. You'll have the target asset freezes, you'll have restrictions on services, and then also you can also have a direction to cease business. So the first one is very much obviously, it looks like what it says. It's an aim to restrict the access to funds and economic resources that that sanctioned party would have. If you are on that asset freeze list in the UK, you'll be on OSI's what is called their consolidated list. So if you're on that, then you will come under target asset freezes. If you think of the second one where you have a restriction on financial markets and services, if you can think back at certain times, some of the Russian banks weren't allowed to go to capital markets to raise capital. So that's the type of restriction they can put in through the financial markets and services. And then the last one is very focused, and it may be a specific type of business. It may apply to an individual or group or a sector where they will actually say, in this sector, you now cease to do business. And they literally try and close those businesses down very, very rapidly. Okay. So the one that people might commonly see and may also commonly be exposed to is where you would have an asset freeze. And what you can do, or what you must do rather. So we'll look at this from two angles here. When you go through this, we'll go back one we step on some sense. When you go through this, you'll often see this term called a regime. It's called the sanctions regime. And a regime is a collection of sanctions measures, effectively. Sometimes they can be thematic, sometimes they can be geographic. So an example of maybe the ones that would be thematic would be sanctions that could relate to chemical weapons, sanctions that could maybe relate to global human rights. So those would be ones that would be deemed to be thematic. And then ones that would be geographic might be the ones, obviously, if there were sanctions possibly in relation to Afghanistan or to Burundi. So those, that's a little bit of background. When you see the term regime, it's really a collection of sanctioned measures that are put in place. So in the UK, sometimes you'll see an asset freeze. So what must I do? So if one of your clients is a sanctioned party and is subject to an asset freeze, you cannot deal with those frozen funds or those economic resources associated with that designated person. You cannot make funds or economic resources available to him or in any other way to benefit that person through a third party in any shape or form. And also goes without saying, you cannot be seen to try and circumvent the financial sanctions in any shape or form. The things you need to do, obviously, is that you would freeze those assets immediately. You can't continue to deal with the assets or make them available to the person, as we touched upon above. There are exceptions allowed, and there's legislation that will allow you to do that. We'll cover that off in a second. And you can actually deal with them if you do have a license from OFSI. But one of the most important things you would have an obligation to do is you would have an obligation to report the fact that you do have assets of a sanctioned party, and you make that report through to OFSI. And again, that would need to be done promptly. So very often, FSCom will do audits for clients. And sometimes when we do those audits, we will look at their transaction monitoring, we will look at their PEPs and sanctions screening. And the one area that they cannot really, sometimes companies will have a bit of delay, maybe looking at transaction monitoring alerts. Or they might have a bit of delay, maybe looking at a potential PEP match. But the one thing a firm should never have is really any delay. So whenever you would have a sanction alert, it really should be addressed as promptly as possible. You really cannot afford to let that one sit for 2 or 3 days. So they would be the most important alerts you would get. You want to get them actioned immediately to see if you do have a reporting obligation. Sometimes again, this will be teased out. you know, what do I do? What's the difference between maybe a name match and a target match? So very basic stuff, but we'll try and be very clear for it. So sometimes on your screening system, you may kick out with and let's say it's Niamh Maguire. So you have a Niamh Maguire, and on your database, you may well have Niamh Maguire, and you may have one or two Niamh Maguires, you may have three or four, and you may have a potential match with a party that's on a consolidated list. You then also may find that when you look at Niamh's date of birth, which I'll not give away in the presentation today, but if you look at her date of birth, you may be able to confirm that one of the three potential matches you have is your Niamh Maguire, or none of them are Niamh Maguire because you have a date of birth or you have a location. So when you're going through the OC stuff, you'll see the difference in a name match and a target match. So the target match is where obviously the Niamh Maguire that is a sanctioned party is the Niamh Maguire that's your client. And the name match is that step before that where you're trying to rule people out by primary identifiers or secondary identifiers. So really, the sanctions legislation obviously kicks in where you have a target match. So the party that is sanctioned, the individual, the group, whatever it may be, or the limited company, has a proper match with your client, and then that's your target match. So the last question we have there, and that is, what do I do if I get a sanctions target match? It's actually very difficult to give you a definitive response here because each of these will depend upon the nature of the sanction. But the most important thing we can say to you today at this webinar is you have no delay. You need to consider it and thoroughly review it to see exactly what obligations you do or don't have. So speed and a prompt response is probably the two best things you can do once you're sure you have a target match. Sometimes this important factor isn't always considered. Again, as I said earlier, sometimes we do it for clients, we talk these through, and this is something that, again, doesn't always come through clearly. It's the ownership and control factor. So I've given you an example here. ABC Limited Trades in the UK, and it's not listed. So it is not on OC's consolidated list. So you look at it and you're happy and you screen that entity when you're onboarding them and everything looks good and away you go. And that would be the perception. However, when you drill down into the ownership chain of ABC, it actually reveals it has a majority owner in a different company, for this example here, called XYZ Limited. And when you screen XYZ Limited, it actually shows up that it is a designated entity. So as the ownership and the control criteria has been met, it actually means that ABC Limited comes under exactly the same restrictions as the designated entity, in this case, XYZ. This is one of the reasons why it's so important when you're dealing with companies that the ownership structures are understood and they're appealed back to the right level. Most firms, when they look at ownership, come down to 25%. If firms are applying EDD, they very often drop that down to 10%. But you could look at it first of all and think, well, we're fine, we can continue to make payments for ABC because they're not sanctioned. But the very fact that XYZ owns all their shares or owns the majority of shares, they come under exactly the same sanctioned responsibilities as the parent company. And that sometimes is a point that a lot of firms don't always fully appreciate when they're evaluating onboarding clients, and maybe when the initial party doesn't hit a sanction screen, but it's one of the other related parties that comes through their screening program. So that's just an important point to tease out today. So you're now in the position, the unenviable position probably, where you actually do have a match. And you start getting into the practical stuff here. You know, what do I have to do? It's not great that I have a match, but what do I have to do? Primarily, you need to inform OFSI as soon as possible. You need to give them the information and knowledge upon which you base your suspicion. So it's a wee bit like the money laundering regulations. You have to have the basis of why you're reporting them. It's not just a suspicion. Sorry, it's not just a hunch. You have to have some basis of suspicion. You tell them exactly why you're reporting this entity as individual to them. It's also incumbent upon you that you have to inform them of the information you hold in that designated party. So there may be information you have on them and that they don't have. So again, you give them that information. If that designated person is a client of your firm, you must also tell OC the nature, the amount, and the quantity of funds or economic resources that you hold them. So really, you're giving a very detailed report into OFC of exactly what you have. You have Fred McDowell and you hold deposits for him, or you hold investments for him, or whatever the nature of that would be. And you're giving that information as you report to OFC. OFC have a very good document on their website. I would recommend if you have time, it's really, really good if you want to read it. And it's entitled the UK Financial Sanctions General Guidance for Financial Sanctions, and it's dated in August 22. And rather than going into all the detail of the reporting obligations, section 5 of that guidance gives you all the detail at OFC around what your obligations are should you report to, should you be in the position where you need to report to them. A question we're often asked when we're out doing training or with clients is, okay, how do I report? You know, what do I need to do? Okay, so we've given you a couple of useful links here. Reports of a suspected designated person, where it's frozen assets or credit or frozen accounts. The actual form to use can be found at that link there, the first link, and can be found on gov.uk and the link there. And then all reports to OFC involving designated persons should include the group ID. And that's a very important reference number. It's a unique identifier for that designated person. So that obviously helps OFC a lot to then kick off their investigation once you report to them. The last paragraph here, whereas it's quite small in size in this slide, is actually very, very important. In your review process, you should also consider if you have reporting obligations under POCA. So if you are reporting the sanctioned entity through the OFC, that's great. But also in your review, you may have come across activity that you have the grounds of suspicion on, from the money laundering or the terrorist finance side of things. You still have to do your report through to the NCA under the normal SAR process. And also it flips the other way too. Should you then be submitting a SAR, your SAR does not actually meet your reporting obligations under financial sanctions. So unfortunately, you may well have to consider doing two reports. So the two different things. If you report me through a SAR, you still have to report me through OFC. If you're doing a report through OFC and you did see some activity you have grounds of suspicion on, you still would need to do your SAR through to the NCA. So a lot of clients think maybe if you do one or you do one or the other, then both will actually kind of inform each other. That's not the case when you read through the legislation. There are exceptions in licensing. And if you get a chance, I still think it's available about 10 days ago. But 10 days ago, OFSI did a very, very good 1-hour webinar, and it actually focused on licensing. It covered a wider range of things too, but it did a very good detailed section on licensing, the different types of license, how you apply them. So that, as far as I know, is usually available for about a fortnight after the webinar. So if you can get that, it's very good, it's concise, it's run for an hour. There's a questions and answers session at the end of it, which was very, very good too. There were live practical questions. So if you get a chance, that's very good. I would recommend you get a chance to watch that and listen to it. So a license is a written permission from OFC that allows you to act in a situation where otherwise you would potentially be breaching the prohibitions imposed by the sanctions. Okay. The asset freezing legislation permits without needing a license to do certain things. So if you have a frozen account and the interest is going to be posted to that account, that can go ahead. But those new funds, so if you have my investment account of £60,000 and you're going to post interest to it of £500, that actual interest posting can go through, but that new £500 also needs to be immediately frozen. If Niamh Maguire sent me through £1,000 to my account, and those incoming funds, and you'd know suspicion on them, they can be credited to my account, but again, they would immediately be frozen. And also OFC would then be advised, because they would obviously be interested to know who a third party was that would be sending credits through to a sanctioned entity. So those are the types of things that can go through automatically. OFC's guidance in these areas is available, but it is regularly updated. So it's a good thing if you're in this situation where you have an asset freeze, it would be very, very relevant to always check it at that point in time. You may have checked it 2 months ago. I wouldn't guarantee that the advice is still exactly the same. So again, it's always good to check that when you're in the live situation of having that scenario. So licensing, okay. This is an area that a lot of people maybe don't appreciate, and the detail that's in here. There are two different types of licensing. OFC will only consider licensing activities when they fall into certain criteria, obviously. Licenses cannot be issued retrospectively. So if you're in a position where maybe you've made a payment or you received funds and you're aware that you have potentially breached the sanctions, you cannot apply for a license and have it retrospectively dated. You are in breach. Going for a license now will not take you out of that breach position. OCD do issue what are called general licenses, and they allow the undertaking of specified activities, which potentially would be otherwise prohibited. So I've given you an example here. If you go onto their site, and if you look under the license number that I've quoted here, INT 2023-2711256, that has a title called Syria Humanitarian, and I literally just screenshot in a small snippet of it. So it effectively allows a relevant person may perform relevant activities, provided that the relevant person believes they are carrying out that relevant activity and so necessary to ensure the timely delivery. In this particular case, it was for earthquake relief efforts in Syria and Turkey, and there's no reasonable cause for the relevant person to suspect otherwise. So this is where there's a practical thing here. There's a lot of funding and aid obviously was going through to Syria and Turkey, and sanctions are not there to provide or to try and prevent that type of payment. There may be other sanctions against Syria, but this one here is a license that OCD themselves put up, and it would come under one of their general licenses. So you don't need to apply for that license. So if one of your clients is trying to make a humanitarian payment to Syria, you do not need to apply for a license. This general license will give you the scope to make that payment. Again, these are updated very regularly. There's new licenses, new general licenses coming out from OCD on quite a regular basis. So again, it's very relevant to be on top of their site and just see which the current ones are. Okay, so just said there again that OCD's website will usually have the detail around the general licenses and guidance on how to use them. So firms themselves, you can't actually apply for a general license. It's OCD who issues those general licenses. And HM Treasury can vary them or suspend them or revoke them at any point in time. So again, it's just always going over that point again, just making sure that you're on that site as and when it's very, very current. Each general license will include the requirements. So there are going to be certain requirements attached to that. And again, they will be detailed on that. So there are sometimes conditions applied, but on that general license issue, obviously, it will give you the specifics. So if you've got that payment, it's your responsibility. The fact that there's a general license there, OCD will make it very, very clear that that does not give you the authority to make the payment. What they're doing is giving the parameters of that general license in this particular case for humanitarian payments. You still have to look at the payment you have, and then you have to give yourself comfort and peace of mind that you are making the payments under what is licensed. If you have any doubt, then you need to obviously refer it to OCD. So they're very, very clear. It doesn't give you a kind of blank check to push everything through to Syria. That maybe is for humanitarian aid, you have to make sure that you've met the conditions of that general license. And they're very, very clear that's your responsibility as a firm. So if you are trying to do a transaction that's not part of a general license, the next thing is you can apply for what's called a specific license. And you have to provide OCD obviously a fair degree of detail around why you're applying for this, what is the purpose for it, and then they will consider it. There's no charge for getting a license. And if they decline it, they will usually tell you why they've declined it. And sometimes people will resubmit. The form here, there's a link in there for where you get the forms. If you think you have the cause or you want to make a specific payment, the general licenses don't cover that, and you're applying for a specific license. That specific license, generally speaking, will only cover that transaction. It doesn't cover all your future transactions. So very often, if you were granted one today, and you were doing a similar transaction maybe in 3 weeks' time, you would probably have to go and get another specific license. So they don't kind of, it doesn't give you a specific, for 3 months or anything out there. It's very, very specific. All right. And just down at the bottom, I've given you some of the idea, you can see the degree of details they'll want to be able to make their adjudication, whether they should grant you that specific license. And that license always only applies to your firm, obviously doesn't apply to other firms. Even if they're doing a very, very similar transaction, they would have to apply for their own specific license. So we maybe should have done this as a poll question, which I didn't think we would, because it's a pretty obvious answer. Do I need to comply with UK financial sanctions? And the answer to that is 100% yes. anybody who thinks they wouldn't have to would be taking a huge kind of risk. UK sanctions apply to all persons within the territory of the UK and the territorial sea of the UK. It goes to individuals, legal entities, it goes to groups, and it also extends to wherever that UK person is anywhere in the world. Just to give you an idea of some fines that have been applied, OTC fines, Standard Chartered Bank, 20.47 million. Back in March 22 for breaching sectoral sanctions, which actually were imposed against Russia. And in 2019, OFAC imposed financial penalties globally, which came to a total of $1.2 billion, where entities and individuals had actually breached US sanctions. So it's taken quite serious. If you're deemed to have breached sanctions, and if you're convicted of that offence, you can be jailed up to 7 years, and there can also be a monetary penalty as well. So sanctions are, you know, they carry a very, very heavy burden of responsibility. And that's obviously why they have to be done very quickly, or done promptly, but also done very, very thoroughly and well thought through, as opposed to just maybe doing them at a kind of more generic level. If you're in the position where you've breached sanctions, there can be very serious consequences for you as an individual and also for the firm. So they obviously would be taken very seriously. One question we're often asked is, you know, where do I get all the lists? I get quite confused, you know, what's a consolidated list? Where's the asset freeze list? So again, the best site that I can see from these obviously is OFC at the moment. There are consolidated lists of asset freeze targets. And this is a list of all the persons in relation to financial investment restrictions. If I was on that list, then I'm used that term, I come to that term of a designated person. Very often, again, with clients, sometimes they'll ask us in our screening systems where we do sanction screening, what are the best lists that we should actually have on our screening tool? Your providers will often tell you that anyway, but some of the main ones that firms will do, so obviously if you're in the UK, you would have the UK sanctions list, the consolidated list. Other ones that are very commonly used would be the OFAC, where you have specially designated nationals. There's also an OFAC consolidated sanctions list, and that's for people who are non specially designated nationals. And the other one that very commonly would be used would be the UN Security Council consolidated list. And when we're doing audits and work with clients, very often they will have a number of listings in their sanctions screening. Obviously, OFAC would be one of the key ones, and also their own country one. The other one, sometimes just from a very practical note, is if clients sometimes are making payments, and they're making payments to jurisdictions that maybe would have slightly higher risk, very often they will go, so let's say there's a firm and they're making payments through, for example, maybe they're making payments through to Belarus. Well, Belarus is a bad example, maybe, but anyway, Belarus, they will also look at the Belarusian sanctions list. If they're making maybe payments through to Australia, they will specialize in that. So again, they're building up their protection. If they have a lot of payments flowing to one geography, they will very often also build in that geography specific, country specific sanctions list. Where can you find OFC's listings? OFC maintains in a format guide. You can see there on the right hand side, that's if you go into their consolidated list, that's exactly what the first page looks like. And it just happens that it's alphabetical. So you'll see the fact that their first regime is Afghanistan. And if you're looking down, so what I would often recommend to clients is if you have a sanctioned match, and then clients will very obviously very often be concerned, and they'll phone us and they'll ask us, what should I do? The first thing is you need to go to the sanction. You need to see the detail of what the actual sanction is, because each sanction can have different obligations and different conditions. And sometimes it's not always prohibiting what you may be doing. So it's very, very important you actually locate the sanctioned or the sanctioned entity and understand exactly what they are being impacted upon. So I try and give you an example, and I'll sanitize it a little bit, but the principle behind this was in a past role when I was MNRO, we and Sberbank, and one of the Russian banks at that point in time, were prohibited from going to the capital markets to raise bonds and raise capital. That was one of the sanctions that was against Russian banks. In Belfast, we had a firm that was doing some work for a company that owned maritime vessels. and they had to put some people onto one of the boats to do repair work on that boat. That boat was actually owned by a Russian entity. So when they had done their work, they obviously invoiced it. And when the invoice was sent through to the owner of the boat, the payment was sent through. And let's say the payment was for £10,000. That payment was actually issued from the owners of the boat who banked the spur bank. So the institution that I worked for at that point in time, it obviously kicked that payment out because it had the origin of the funds was coming from the spur bank. Our systems obviously realized the spur bank couldn't do certain things, so it kicked the spur bank payment out. That payment, when we scrutinized it, was nothing to do with spur bank going to raise capital. It was a genuine business case. We asked our client for the invoice just to be 100% sure of exactly what was going on, so we could see that our client had put some repair mechanical engineers on the boat to fix the repairs. We could see the owner of the boat. We checked the boat, so the boat wasn't sanctioned. The owners of the boat weren't sanctioned. Our client were nothing to do with sanctions, so we did our due diligence all around the actual payment, and we were happy, and we released the payment because what Spur Bank were being sanctioned for was going to be able to raise capital. It wasn't to punish their ordinary day-to-day customers who were trying to make normal commercial transactions. So it's very important to get the detail, because in theory, if you didn't know that detail, you'd have seen Spur Bank and you wouldn't let the payment go through. But once you knew the context of the payment and you were happy that actually what the payment was related to was not subject to the sanction. So it's very, very important to try and get that detail and see exactly what the detail of those sanctions are, and then see what are the implications to the transaction you have in front of you. Okay. You'd also get free updates from HM Treasury and OFSI as they change listings. So again, you can get those email alerts. They're very, very good. And again, they're a free service. So sometimes it's no bad thing if you're in the role of an MRO or head of compliance or risk to be able to get those free alerts. What happens if you breach? As we said earlier, upon conviction, you can be in prison for 7 years. Law enforcement also has at its disposal civil and criminal enforcement options to come after those who have breached sanctions. The motivation to impose sanctions can be quite wide-ranging. They can be economic, but they can also be political and military. And what I've tried to do today, I've tried to make it a presentation about sanctions as opposed to particularly speaking about Russian sanctions, but obviously their invasion of Ukraine, because the speed and the volume of new sanctioned parties coming on in the last 12 months has been very high, but sanctions have been something that financial services firms have had to deal with for many years. Most firms have three touch points when it comes to sanctions. It's evaluating, the first one is evaluating, do they actually have a match? Secondly, if they have now confirmed they do have a target match, they then need to consider very promptly what do they now have to do to remain compliant. And the third point is they need to document the review, and that's very, very important. Potentially, they might get their review wrong. They may let a payment go. But one of their biggest defenses is that that might be quite a genuine mistake. If they cannot evidence that they've done the review and they've taken the appropriate steps, they're very, very exposed. Where at least if you can document the review, it does give you some degree of defense that you've considered all the options. So documenting how you've reviewed a sanctions match is critically important. Some practical tips. We've touched upon this already. Understand the transaction in front of you. Sometimes you may need to go to your client and getting supporting invoices to be in a position to fully ensure that the principle behind the sanction, and that you're not compromising it just because it's a technical thing. So sometimes you want to make sure you may need to get supporting evidence. Check the reliability of your screening system. When we've done audits for clients, it's not uncommon that the fuzzy logic calibration they think they have, the system has maybe changed or had an update or had a a procedural update or whatever. So again, possibly every 6 months, you know, it is no bad practice to pop in some parties who you know are sanctioned. It's quite a regular finding in audits that the fuzzy logic calibration isn't picking up sanctioned parties. And then also again, retain that test as your logic. You may need to go back to your system provider and understand why, you know, you're not picking up people who are certain or definitely sanctioned parties. That is quite commonly picked up on some of our audits. Some of the questions clients will often say is, how often should I screen? What list should I consider? We've covered that a little bit earlier. And can I batch screen? Again, unfortunately, there's no definitive answer we can give. This is very much going to be in a risk-based approach. If your firm deals in very low-risk jurisdictions where sanctions have never been really applied, some firms may take a risk-based approach and say they can batch screen. If you're making payments on a regular basis to maybe higher-risk jurisdictions, some clients will also then screen daily. Some clients will have ongoing screening that is live, real-time screening. There's a range from one group that will do real-time screening and the ongoing screening on a daily basis. Other firms maybe screen on a batch basis, sometimes weekly, sometimes monthly. The important thing is, I think, is to document where you land on that to show you've reviewed it. You reviewed it from a risk perspective. You understand your obligations, but on a risk-based approach, you do it daily, you do it real-time, or you do it weekly, and you do it on a batch basis. So there's nothing prescriptive says you have to do it, you know, every 24 hours. The legislation says you need to be aware if you have a sanctioned party. Therefore, you have to so show the evidence you've considered. What is that risk to you as a firm? And then just lastly, some very practical takeaways. Understand the sanction, document and review, think it through thoroughly, the effect of what is it trying, what is the sanction trying to prevent, and in any shape or form, are you circumventing that? The OSCE guidance is really, really good. If you're unsure, a wee bit like money laundering sometimes, if you're unsure whether you've got a suspicion or not, you know, consult a colleague, talk to your MLRO, and also OSCE, I don't think it's mad keen. There's a certain route you have to go through if you're getting media inquiries, but I think they're also very approachable if to get guidance from them, and they're very keen to engage with the sector. That's all our slides formally. So we have about 7 or 8 minutes left. I'm not sure, well, I've been going through the slides, if we've had people who have sent some questions through, Niamh, maybe you'd have a better line of sight of that than me. But we have a few minutes, we can take some questions.
Yes, there is a number of questions that have been sent through, Fred, and that was a great presentation. I love the use of my name throughout, that's great, as an example. But we'll probably fit in a number of questions. So the first one is, can firms service grey-listed FAFT countries? So the FAFT is FAFT, Financial Action Task Force.
Sorry, can you just repeat it, Niamh? The line broke a little bit there, sorry.
Sorry, can firms service grey-listed FAFT countries?
Okay. So you have two listings in this, I suppose, in a sense. You have a black list and you have a grey list. The black list is your high-risk jurisdictions, and they are subject to a call to action. And very often, countries that could be on the black list will also have economic sanctions applied to them. The grey list, you know, by nature what it is, you can think the title, it's a little bit less difficult. They may not just be the same high risk, but there are also countries that are what are called under increased monitoring. So they can also still face economic sanctions. Sometimes those sanctions could be from the IMF or the World Bank. But definitely if you're dealing with a jurisdiction that's on the grey list, definitely on the black list and also on the grey list, you're dealing with a jurisdiction that has a higher risk of money laundering and terrorist finance. What you can do through some of the screening providers, they will actually give you some background to the country, but also on the FATF sites, you can see, is that country trending to improving and being more efficient in its money laundering controls? So you can get updated commentary. They will submit papers in to FATF, who will also, I suppose, assess. So they will have had action plans to redress their deficiencies in AML and terrorist finance. And you can see if they're making progress. And often sometimes countries will be added onto the grey list. And then after a few years, and once FATF has been satisfied that put enough controls in place, they can be removed from it. But when you read the up-to-date report on what the status of why they're on the grey list, what the issues were and what progress they have made or not made, it does very easily give you a good sense of what risk you're taking on. So if I was going to go and deal with a country that was on the grey list, I would obviously have a higher level of controls put in place to mitigate I am taking on a higher risk. And my normal onboarding procedures, I wouldn't maybe necessarily apply. I would apply a higher level of due diligence. I may drop my beneficial ownership checks down to a lower percentage. I may turn on more transaction monitoring alerts. But I would essentially make sure I would do EDD because I am going to deal, potentially I'm going to onboard a client from a higher risk jurisdiction. I'm going to make sure that my due diligence is at a higher level in a country that we have lower risk. I hope that answered that one.
That's great. Thank you, Fred. The next one is, which law enforcement agencies give helpful briefings on relevant documents and which not?
HM Treasury is very good. I actually have a real strong preference towards the OFSI site. They're not sponsoring today's webinar, but they've been mentioned quite a bit. But no, it's very, very good. I think it's very practical. It tells you what your reporting obligations are. It gives you a bit of background on to sanctions for Russia, for our sake, which is obviously very a common question a lot of firms have nowadays. It'll give you links to, you know, where you find a certain report, what information is needed in that report. It gives you links into their listings. HM Treasury is good. FATF is also good. There's also the other one is very good as United Nations. So there's a number of sources, but probably the one that I would probably go to, if I'm being honest, from a UK perspective, is I would go to OFSI, because if I do have a sanctioned match, that's the entity I need to report it through to.
Perfect. Thank you. And probably have room for one more question. So final question is, I would like to understand what prospective customers cannot be told about sanctions related holds when onboarding.
Well, the sanctions information, I mean, any member of the public can go onto the OFSI site. So that it's public domain knowledge. So if Fred McDowell is on the consolidated list, that's not a secretive list, or, you know, a source of intelligence that's not common knowledge. So anybody can go on there and see that. So, you know, if somebody's trying to onboard, if I'm a firm and I'm trying to onboard somebody and I get a match, I am not breaking any confidence as telling them you're sanctioned, or, you know, where you're trying to make a payment to, the party you're making payment to is sanctioned, because they can see that themselves. The thing you can't say to customers is that you would be reporting that to OFSI. So if you were having to freeze my assets, you actually cannot say to me, we're freezing your assets, you know, we're making a report. I think that's what you can't say. It's a wee bit akin to when I was MLRO, on occasions when we would have been maybe submitting a Damelstar. We had to freeze the funds that were subject to the Damelstar, and clients sometimes would have come along and tried to lift part of those funds. We couldn't tell them that their assets were frozen. We couldn't tell them that some of the funds was frozen. We couldn't tell them we had done a report. We couldn't tell them we were waiting for consent to be given by the NCA. And unfortunately, we just usually just had to front up to them and just say, and the terminology we used to use was, we're unable to facilitate your transaction at this point in time. Which, as you can imagine, didn't go down particularly well with clients when they're standing in front of maybe in a branch. So very often we would put senior management in front of those customers to try and just, they would have maybe the experience to deal with customers who were then going to be tricky, who would push and probe to try and get responses. The danger is that people were always worried about tipping off. So we didn't widen out our response. We literally just held to one line and said, we're able to facilitate your transaction. You know, if you have a firm, if you have one of your clients making a payment to a sanctioned party, to tell them that party is sanctioned, I don't think that's breaking any confidences, because it's public domain knowledge. But, you know, if you're investigating it, if you're reporting it, then that type of additional information you wouldn't share with a client, no.
Perfect. Thank you, Fred. So that's all the time we have for today. Thank you all for attending. Thank you, Fred, for a great presentation. That was great. Any questions that were not answered by Fred in the Q&A session, we will follow up in as soon as possible by email to those people who planted the questions. And as well, we would really appreciate it if you would fill in the survey at the end of the session, because we really appreciate all your feedback. So that's all from me and Fred. So thank you all again. And over to you, Fred, if you want to say thank you.
No, just thank everybody. Everybody's busy. So again, just hopefully you've got some snippets. It is a very, very wide ranging subject. You just don't in an hour have time to get into detail, but hopefully you've been given some practical help that will help you with any sanctions queries you would have. So thank you for your time and attending the webinar today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and see you all soon, hopefully.
Thank you. Bye.